is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Divvy Crypto Podcast. And on this episode, Jeff McCabe, the CEO of Divvy, as you guys all know, is going to be sitting down with Philippe Beccazzi, the CEO of Stablehouse, which is a new global digital currency clearinghouse for real-time cross-blockchain payments. It's a really cool concept to be bringing a clearinghouse to the cryptocurrency world with stable coins in mind. A lot of topics are covered in this interview, everything from, you know, your average stable coins on ERC-20 to Tether, all the way through to Libra at the end. So without further ado, let's dive right into the interview with Philippe.
Hi, so it's great to meet you. You're lucky you're in Bermuda. I'm in Costa Rica, so we're both in wonderful tropical places for all this madness that's happening. And I'm excited to have you on the show today. You're going to talk about something that is very, very important, but a lot of people don't realize why it's important. So we like to try to bring these kind of complex subjects down to the average person's level, especially for Divvy, because we're crypto made easy. We try to make everything easy. And it's not always easy to explain complicated things in this type of way, but that's what we'll attempt to do today. So how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me, guys. And I'm happy to talk about, you know, Stablehouse and XBTO and crypto in general. And we can go in any which way you want. It's exciting times and scary times a little bit. But there's so much to talk about.
Yeah, so maybe you can explain what Stablehouse does and why it's important and how it sort of fits into the rest of the cryptocurrency and blockchain industry.
Yeah. So let me give you a little bit of a background on myself. Very, very short. I started my career almost 20 years ago now. It seems like a lifetime. Started trading. I started my career in a hedge fund, trading all kinds of assets around the world. Had a really global view. Actually, the strategy is called a global macro strategy. It looks at pretty much things top down in all kinds of asset classes. Left a large hedge fund in mid-2007, just before the crisis. And during the crisis, I used time to travel because there was not really much you could do. You know, we're not going to raise money anyways. And business, you know, launching a business was something that you could do, but you probably should. You could take your time. So in 2010, I basically started my holding, which started making investments in various things. I started looking at Bitcoin and through the white paper. And it took me a couple of trials. The first time I read the white paper, I was introduced to a white paper. I read it. I said, wow, that's interesting. And then I moved on to other things. And then 6 months later, I met with a cousin of mine. He's like, oh, you must be in Bitcoin. And I was like, actually, it's interesting that you remind me. I should be in Bitcoin because of all the crisis, everything that was going on. It reminded me of the white paper. And I thought, more and more people are talking about it. There's something there. So I started dabbling with Bitcoin, doing a little bit of mining. And then, you know, basically thinking about how I could lever my knowledge of the markets, of technology. I've always been a tinker. I've always grown up, building computers, playing games. It was a perfect match. Like Bitcoin was perfect match for me of finance and meets tech. And I really enjoyed diving into it and trying to understand from a philosophical perspective what it meant to the world. To technology, to finance, but it took me until 2015 to really figure out a business model. And the business model that I thought was important and that was lacking at the time was that there was no real quasi-institutional player that would provide good liquidity to exchanges. Exchanges were really doing things very in a very amateurish way, and there was a lot of gaps in the liquidity, which created a lot of slippage and basically not a great trading experience for people who didn't know what they were doing. They thought they were getting one price, they were getting another. And so we decided that we were going to make a better market. And XBTO was born in February 2015. And we started on one exchange. And then by the end of the year, we were on 6 exchanges. Now we're on 35 plus exchanges. And we've grown significantly, of course, because the ecosystem's grown, the price, the market capitalization of crypto has grown significantly. And so we've become bigger than I thought quite quickly. And now we do mining. We have an investment venture investment arm, and we also incubate companies when we advise governments and organizations in regards to crypto. So Stablehouse is sort of XBTO's new venture, and it's focused on stablecoins. I started in Bitcoin, but I thought Bitcoin was a very special kind of asset where I didn't really believe, or I quickly believed that it was not going to be adequate for most people to buy coffee or to pay a taxi fare or to go into a restaurant, because you know there's too much fluctuation in the price. People have to do the math, and it's just not very straightforward. People, for the most part, are quite happy with their U.S. dollars when it comes to buying a coffee. Bitcoin has a use case in store of value, sort of systemic, hedging against systemic risk, right? And thinking about how better of a system it is versus gold, right? And so what I wanted to do is I wanted to do a little bit of Bitcoin, but I want to also do something that would address payments, remittances, and all that. So stablecoins are one of those interesting use cases that you can put on a blockchain. You basically digitize a bank account into a blockchain, usually Ethereum. These days, it's mostly Ethereum, but there are other blockchains that are quite secure and quite decentralized that can offer quick, cheap ability to move value around, right? And so that's basically what we wanted to take advantage of, is to say, okay, we're going to create a company that basically connects all these ecosystems together, basically connect all the blockchains, all of the stable coins, and all of the currencies, and basically reinvent Swift, MasterCard, Visa, remittance companies in one company, effectively, right? So Stablehouse is based here in Bermuda. It's regulated by the Bermuda Monetary Authority. It's been so for about 6 months. We're in closed beta, and we're effectively an FX gateway for digital assets, right? So we want to be able to let people who have who've adopted a specific stablecoin, for example, say Paxos or USDC, and they have it in their wallet, to go to Japan and to pay via a QR code, via an app, for their cab ride in yen, right? And not have to even worry about having yen stablecoin. It's just very transparent. You scan the QR code, and Stablehouse basically give you the rate at which you're going to be buying those yen and remitting to the merchant. So
I would say you must be quite an expert in stablecoins. Do you have a favorite one? Because we talk about this a lot. Which ones do we want to have? And everybody always, every time you talk about Tether, which is the most famous one, everybody kind of rolls their eyes and feels like that's a pretty risky one. How do you feel about the stable coin markets? Are there others that kind of stand out, or do you think Tether's gotten too big to fail? How do you see that?
Look, Tether was the first one. It was trailblazing, and it's obviously a very successful. And so it's been able to adapt. It was on Omni, as you know, which is kind of slow blockchain. It's basically based on Bitcoin. It was expensive to move around and slow. Now it's on ERC-20. Then it went on other blockchains. It went on Tron for a little bit. So that's sort of the evolution. And so I believe that there's not going to be just one stablecoin. There's going to be multiple sponsors of stablecoins, and just like there's going to be multiple banks. And so Tether is a good one. USDC. If you need to be regulated, like for example, if you're an institution in the U.S., you may have a problem with your compliance department when you're trying to get on board with Tether, because there are some frictions there. There are legal considerations that need to be taken into account. And so maybe USDC one for a US-based player is maybe an easier input or sort of portal into digital assets. I don't have a favorite one. I am agnostic. I am for the cheapest and fastest stablecoin. And look, if you're in euros, you want a euro stable coin, but you want that euro stable coin to be, again, fairly cheap to transact with and quick to settle, right? So those are the key things. And secure, of course, because you want that blockchain, although it should be an afterthought for most people. They shouldn't even have to worry about security, right? The same way they don't worry about security when they use their credit card, or, well, credit cards maybe a bad example, but maybe when they log into their bank account, right? There's a certain belief that your money is probably safe. At least it's FDIC insured here in the US. Yeah. So we're getting to a point where people need to use blockchain without knowing they're using it, right? So right. The technology exactly. Should really be abstracted. And that's where we're trying to go. We're trying to make the UI UX as good as possible, as simple as possible, so that people use it, get a benefit from it, without even having to worry about what they're using in terms of the technology stack, right? The back end.
Yeah, that makes sense. This is kind of a curveball question, but I live in Costa Rica. A lot of our team's in Costa Rica, and we own part of a fintech company in Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. And so we've thought about creating a Costa Rica stablecoin for the currency here called the Colón. Mm-hmm. So would you have a recommendation if we wanted to create one or partner with somebody to create one? We talked to David from Peg about it, and he said they could do it. But I wanted to get your input too. Like, how, if we or somebody else or one of the banks or the government in Costa Rica wanted to create a stablecoin colony, it's a country of, between 3 and 4 million people. Yeah. How would they do that?
Well, it depends if you want the sponsor to be the government, in which case it sort of becomes more of a central bank digital coin, CBDC. Or if you want it to be a private enterprise that's sort of tokenizing in a legal way, the Colón, the same way Tether is being tokenized or USDC is being tokenized. That really is up to up to you to decide who's going to be the end sponsor. In terms of technology, you mentioned Peg and David. I know David. At the end of the day, I think it really comes down to a few parameters that you want to think about when you're digitizing money. Is, again, you want it to be on a secure blockchain. You don't want any double spend or any risks that your blockchain gets reorganized or taken over, right? So ERC-20s are pretty standard these days. The problem with ERC-20, of course, is that sending money on a stable coin on ERC-20 is very expensive these days. I mean, you cannot buy a coffee using an ERC-20 token, because you will pay as much for the coffee as for the transfer fee. And then the other thing is that ERC-20 is slow. It can be slow, and depending on how much you pay in gas, the transaction could take, 3 hours. It could take a day. It could take 10 minutes, of course. But the point being is no one wants to stick around for that transaction to settle. So that's what's interesting with Lightning, for example, for payments. That's the technology that we've integrated into at Stablehouse and that we want to lever off of, because it's taking the Bitcoin blockchain and it's putting it on a different level, right? And obviously it's work in progress. There are a lot of people who don't like it. They have reasons not to like it. They have arguments against it. This space grows so fast. I would definitely not be short any of these technologies, especially with the A teams that back them. It's just a matter of time until it works and until it's secure enough and easy to use enough for people to be fully adopted. So I would say, if you want to do a first go, a first test, you start with an ERC-20. It's going to be for larger transactions, those that are not as time sensitive. You know, maybe it's for paying government taxes or something like that. That's fine. I mean, you pay $2-3 in transfer fees. The money gets in, you know, 30 minutes later. It doesn't really matter. But, you know, if you want it to be used for a cab fare or to pay for a cocktail on the beach in Costa Rica, then you have to look elsewhere.
Yeah. So if the U.S. government does create a stable coin for the dollar, government sponsored, how is that going to affect the whole market for private stable coins? Do they all just disappear, or some people are predicting that the government won't do that without banning cryptos completely? They have their reasons for believing that. How do you think that argument should go?
Yeah, I mean, if a CBDC were to be issued by the U.S. government, it would kind of create a situation where current stablecoin issuers are kind of disintermediated, but much like the banking system would be disintermediated quite a bit, right? Because effectively, if the Fed or the Treasury issues or has direct access into people's sort of accounts, right? Why do you need a bank? I mean, what's the bank really doing in all this? So you're really kind of upending the whole system. And it's not only the stablecoin issuers, it's just the whole system gets a little bit disintermediated. So it becomes a very interesting new world. I think China is trying to do a lot of this. I don't know exactly how it's working over there. It's going to be very centralized. It'll be very centralized in any sovereign, right? The U.S. dollar is very important to the U.S. government. It'll be as controlled as it can be. They'll want to make sure that AML KYC is very strict, and they will be able to do that if they control it, right? They'll be able to know exactly where the money is going at any which point. So that raises privacy issues. That raises all kinds of issues. But
from the technological side, if they try to do this, is there any blockchain that they could put it on that could handle 100 million users paying for taxis?
But it's also almost moot, right? Because it's a centralized entity trying to decentralize the money, which doesn't really make sense. There's no real reason for them to want to go down that route, because in terms of censorship or immutability, like, they can get that with a private database. There's no reason why they would they would do it any other way. You know, that's the whole thing about blockchain, is at the end of the day, if you want efficiency, very fast transactions, very cheap transactions, there's nothing better than a centralized system, right? But if you want it to be censorship resistant, you want full decentralization, you have to give away a little bit of that speed and efficiency, because that's how it cannot be both at the same time, right? So, and that's the sort of difference between the decentralized trading venues versus the centralized trading venues, right? The liquidity usually on a centralized exchange is going to be more plentiful than on the decentralized ones, simply because the market makers are more at ease making quick markets where they can cancel very quickly their orders and reshift based on market events, right? Mm-hmm. Rather on a DEX, it's kind of more slow. You have to take more risk as a maker, and there's weird edge cases where you can really get hurt. Right now, at least. I mean, maybe in the future it becomes to a point where it'll never be better, but if it reaches to a point where the utility curve gets pretty pretty close, then maybe it's okay, right? Maybe decentralization, it has reached a point where it's good enough, and you can use centralized, really centralized applications on them.
So with Stable House, you mentioned before we started recording that you're going to have a retail product that anybody can participate in. I think on the front of your website, there's a sign up there, right? So can you explain what that will be and how people can get involved?
Yeah, so we are going to, in the next couple months, we're going to be releasing an app. To the degree that this app is going to be available in the US, is still, as you know, a bit challenging due to regulation. But it will be available for sure in Bermuda and in other parts of the world, probably before the US. Unless we can find a way where we're comfortable enough offering it to US retail. So that app is going to really be very simply a wallet that allows you to transact in multiple currencies, including Bitcoin and Ethereum. Not many digital assets, just probably these two. But you're going to be able to use different networks such as Lightning, Liquid, ERC-20s, and other blockchains. And so it'll allow you to really take advantage of all of the sort of the ecosystems that have been built in all these networks, right, that are right now not really connected. I mean, there are projects out there that are trying to connect all these blockchains. But we're a centralized entity. We're a regulated entity. We're going to be like sort of a mix of Revolut and Stripe put together. It's going to be very much API driven. But at the retail level, there will be an app that will be that will allow people to just on-ramp onto a stablecoin, whether it's a USD stablecoin, a Euro stablecoin, Yen stablecoin, a CAD stablecoin, Swissy stablecoin. All these are things that we've integrated into and more every day. And we basically want to cover the world as much as possible so that you can really go to, you know, when COVID gets figured out and hopefully gets figured out soon. When you can go to Japan, you can pay for your sushi or pay for a cab fare using a Japanese yen stablecoin without even having to worry about how do I buy it, how do I procure it, and you know how much is it going to cost. It'll be like an app that you just sign, you just scan the QR code. It'll tell you, oh, this is the yen price right now. Your coffee is $3.50 in your own currency, right? And you and Stablehouse will just simply do the FX for you and settle it very quickly.
Yeah. So, it sounds like a very useful app then once it gets, but it needs to get established. So,
yes.
So do you have a specific...
to be patient. In this space, you have to be patient. It's not, we're trying to not use the usual rails of the banking system, which can be very opaque in terms of very expensive, very slow. So we're really trying to reinvent and trailblaze here. And so that really means that you're not going to have everything day one. You're going to have to believe that, or you're going to have to trust that people will adopt your vision, right? And they'll be there and they'll contribute to the system. There are ways to contribute to Stablehouse in a way where you can make money, you can be incentivized to stake your coins into the system so that other people can remit and pay for things. And you can earn a little bit of an interest rates. And so that's the idea. I mean, we're basically trying to be a liquidity nexus and aggregate as much liquidity into this quasi-clearinghouse exchange. It's a digital payment gateway.
Mm-hmm. And so people that download the app basically can just go in with their credit card, easily buy a whole list of tokens and cryptocurrencies. And so it'll be a lot easier than, say, going to Coinbase. So people ask us a lot, like, well, how do I get Divi? And we say, well, you got to go to Coinbase and sign up and go through all this KYC. And then you got to connect it to your bank account and you got to wait a few days and go through all this and learn a whole new system and figure out where all the buttons are. You have to make, you know, we've had to make videos to guide everybody through them. They end up being, you know, 10 minutes long.
I know.
It's not very easy. It's not the crypto made easy we envisioned. But with your app, we could say, oh, just download this app, get some Bitcoin, and then you can trade it for Divi very easily all over the place. Something like that. So there's a lot of different use cases, I think, for being able to get a whole bunch of different cryptos very easily. But you're also talking about using it as a payment app. So like you said, it it can, people would never need to leave your app. Basically, they can pay for stuff with it.
That's right. That's what we're trying to really do. Is it's not so much to speculate. You know, there's still a phase of basically where the killer app has been speculation, right? Trading on BitMEX, trading on Deribit, trading on all these digital currency platforms, and the idea was just to make money. It's not really. There hasn't really been a lot of use cases around money transmission and payments, and we want to change that. So we don't want to be the Binance, another Binance. We're not going to list all kinds of projects on Stablehouse. What we want to do is just make sure that we list mostly sovereign currencies that are in existence, that have been tokenized, and that have good sponsors, and that are safe to use, so that you can actually remit money from Canada to India to Philippines to Indonesia very quickly, cheaply, and basically make the world better in terms of bringing more people into the banked world, right? And there's a huge problem with the unbanked. And sometimes it's a choice to be unbanked, but most of the time you're unbanked because you can't get a bank account.
Right. So how do you deal with security? I mean, one of the nice things about just dealing with dollars the way people are doing it now is that you can always complain to your credit card company if you don't have the situation where you lose your password and you lose all your money, or you get hacked and you lose all your money. Is there a way that you are finding how to make it so that even though people are dealing with stable coins, which are blockchain based, you can protect them in such a way that they feel like they used to, where they're not so paranoid? Because that's one of the problems we deal with now. Yeah. Is we introduce all these people into crypto, and the more we talk to them about the reality of protecting themselves from all the scammers and phishers and hackers, the less they want to participate in any of this, you know? So do you have a specific solution you have in mind, or you're going after more, at this point, more sophisticated people that understand sort of security hygiene for cryptocurrencies?
So we're going to be a centralized entity. So we're going to deal with, we're going to custody people's funds. Mm-hmm. But to the degree that they don't really need to know about the underlying technology. And that goes back to what I was saying before. The fact that we talk about stable coins and Bitcoin is what we're trying to do is basically say, if you just want dollars and you want to pay something in euros, this is what's going to happen. You don't have to worry that you're actually switching a dollar stable coin into a euro stable coin. That's just sort of the technology layer, right? And so they're not taking any of that at risk when they're using the app. Now, of course, if they are self-custodying their assets on a ledger and they want to use Stablehouse to basically send a certain stable coin to Stablehouse and get another stable coin and different currency to their ledger, then that's a little bit of a different story, but they've made the choice in the beginning anyways to have a ledger and to be non-custodial. A lot of people value this, right? The fact that you don't have to trust a centralized entity to hold your value, your coins. But we're trying to basically be able to be someone you can call and have the usual customer support that you would have, not in the bank, because bank customer support is usually pretty poor, but yeah, at least in the neobank, right? Mm-hmm. Or Revolut and things like that, right?
Yeah.
And with stable coins, I feel like we're not going to do justice without bringing up Libra. I think that being, if it does go through, it would be the biggest financial institution in the world overnight if it did go live. So what are your thoughts on Libra? Will it?
Yeah. Thanks for asking that.
Will it good, bad, evil? What are your thoughts on Libra?
Well, I don't know what Libra is going to be at the end of the day. When it initially launched, I knew it was not going to be able to be successful right away because it was trying to do too many things at the same time. They were trying to create a basket of different currencies and create a new, basically a new currency that was, you know, 20% this, 20% that, 50% this. And that was going to raise all kinds of challenges at a regulatory level, and also at a consumer protection level. I mean, if the only people who know what the basket's true value is a couple of institutions that basically are the gateways, you're basically fleecing people from value. So now they're sort of saying, okay, no, we're not doing basket anymore. We're going to just do US dollar and maybe Swiss and maybe Euro. And we will basically use maybe Facebook as the marketing distribution arm, right? I mean, that's sort of the edge that Libra, which is, has changed its name, by the way, recently. I don't know what the name is of that project. But the point is that they have a network effect advantage where they can distribute their stable coins in a very efficient manner that most other companies do not have. So I think if they get their act in order, they might be successful. You know, but PayPal has a great network effect right now, and they are moving digital dollars and digital euros already around, right? And so when you think about it, you have, you know, what is going to be the difference between a Libra and a PayPal? Like, what would stop PayPal from doing the same thing? And so that's really up to, you know, your own interpretation of who has a better underlying network or product, right? I'm not on Facebook. I haven't been on Facebook in five to 6 years. I don't believe in it anymore. I feel like we're going towards an era of privacy, of there's too much stuff on the internet as it is. And I'm starting to be less trusting of these large scale social media networks that basically data mine your information and sell it and do not give you anything for it, right? And TikTok is another one, but with a different origin. But it all is the same. And I think the trend is towards more privacy, more security. And so we'll see. You know, it's not the first time that Facebook's tried to do payments on its network. I think they had a token at some level, at some point, where they were trying to allow people to pay a little bit like a Venmo. I don't think it went anywhere. So we'll see. I don't really have a very strong opinion as to whether they're going to be successful or not. Obviously, everyone's not the same. There are still a lot of people who use Facebook.
I guess the main question that we'd be interested to know, because people ask us this too, like if they do create, you know, a Libra coin, whether it's a basket or not, would you include that in your stable of stable coins? Because if people want to use it, are you thinking, yeah, if people want to use it and it's big, we should have it? Because that's kind of been the approach I've been saying for us.
Yeah, to the degree that it's open to us and open to other. See, that's the whole thing. I mean, it seems like they want to keep it pretty close to certain what they call, I can't remember what they call, members maybe of the network that are validators, right? So they have like 100, they wanted 100, and they have, maybe they have 50, I don't know. But if we're able to redeem and create this token and people want it, then sure, I mean, we'd be happy to participate in it, no doubt.
Got it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Cool, Philippe. Well, that's kind of a wrap on my end. And Jeff, great questions, by the way. But where can people learn more about Stablehouse?
So you can go to the website, StableHouse.ai. There's a new website that's going to be coming out in the next few weeks. You can follow the Twitter, my Twitter, StableHouse's Twitter. It's at StableHouse_IO, I believe. And there's just going to be a lot of news that are going to come out in the next couple of weeks and months. And yeah, we're just excited. And thanks for having me. And, looking forward to the next one.